All right, welcome back, and Tony Artiman is joining us now, a big supporter of the show, and Tony has Wise Wolf gold and silver, and he has set up to support the show. He set up davidknight.gold. If you go there, they'll take you to Wise Wolf and let him know that you came through us. But thank you for joining us, Tony. Things are getting really crazy now, aren't they?
Well, absolutely crazy. That's the order of the day, David. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's a rare Friday appearance on the show. I appreciate you being flexible with my schedule. I've been back and forth between Texas and Branson, and things are accelerating, David, across the spectrum, politically, economically, socially, spiritually. We're in the thick of it, sir.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think it's only going to go faster. We're going to be picking up speed as we come down that 2029 deadline that they've got for this stuff, so they can have their society in there by 2030. I think it's going to really accelerate from this point. And speaking of acceleration, what do things look like on the financial front?
Oh, well, we've had the introduction of the Bitcoin ETFs. And I had a great interview the other day on the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto show with the gentleman who wrote the book Rigged. Mm-hmm. It's about how they rigged the gold and silver markets, Stuart Englert. And he was on my podcast, and he said, well, they introduced the Bitcoin ETF so they can manipulate Bitcoin. And I hadn't really thought of it that way. I knew that it was a way for the financial markets to keep sort of clean. Their customers don't have to actually own physical Bitcoin, so they're not part of the crypto space and they can invest in it. But he's absolutely right. And I thought, wow, I don't know why that escaped me, but that's how they manipulate the gold and silver markets, is through the ETFs, through the paper. And he said, that's the poison pill. So they're endorsing it. It's like a kiss of death. You get Larry Fink to say, oh, Bitcoin's a store of value, but don't own it. You need to own it through us. We're the custodian of that. So I started to really put that together, because I was trying to figure out what message are they sending here. And it is, I don't know why I ever think positively. It's always sinister with the bankster class.
Oh, yeah. And when was it? Was that in 2017 when they started doing institutional, I forget what it was that changed with Bitcoin, but they were bragging about the fact that, well, institutions are going to start investing in this now because something, I forget what changed. But what you saw was a pump and then a dump. And, so that's when it went up. It was a high at that time, went up like 17 or 18, and then they dumped it down really low, and it stayed there for quite a while. That's why when I looked at this, I thought, well, it kind of seems like they might do that same type of thing again. I know there's other things happening in terms of the halving that is coming up, where they change the way that, the reward that you have for mining it and that type of stuff. But it seems like whenever Wall Street gets involved, there's going to be something really sinister in it. And as you point out, that ETF is just like the paper gold and paper silver and how they manipulated that market. And it really doesn't make any sense if you stop and think about a crypto thing. And it's like they've got to physically transfer anything. What's the purpose of having the ETF? Sometimes they'll say, well, you can buy a fraction of it and you can do it through your broker. So maybe it's easier to do it that way. I don't know. It seemed like a solution in search of a problem.
Right. But again, in Bitcoin, there's 100 million Satoshis for each Bitcoin. So it's divisible by 100 million. So you can buy fractional pieces of Bitcoin all day long, and it's easy to buy. So the fact that I think they're hijacking it. Mm-hmm. There was an article also Zero Hedge was covering about the politicization of CBDC is coming in for this election. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Jared Kushner is upset with Donald Trump for going against the CBDC that he was pushing during the Trump administration. I mean, I know what your take on this is, David, but it looks like, especially in the United States, they are politicizing and putting in the left-right paradigm. It's partisan now, mm-hmm. the central bank digital currency. We know what the Democratic Party is now, mm-hmm. but what a steep fall from the party of Jefferson and Andrew Jackson, right? Just and William Jennings Bryan.
And that's the thing,
embracing the banksters.
Yeah, yeah. Going to crucify us instead of on a cross of gold on a cross of CBDC. Yes. That was why I remember when RFK Jr. came out. I'd been talking about CBDC for a while. And I said, this is good because he's coming out against CBDC and he understands the issue. And that could help it from becoming a partisan issue. because if it becomes a partisan issue, that's really going to hurt us. But now it's become a partisan issue. And when Trump talked about it, he didn't have any sense of what CBDC was. As one person said, well, I guess the people around him did enough analytics that they realize this is something he needs to mention. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. If you're a candidate, you have to align with people on the issues that they're concerned about. But then, of course, doing something about it, I don't really think that that's going to happen. He didn't seem to have any sense of what it was. I remember when DeSantis came out and talked about it early on in his campaign. And he had a 20-minute press conference where he talked about, and he had a sign that said, Big Brother Digital Money. And he laid out all the problems with it. And then the first question is, yes, but what about Donald Trump's indictment in Manhattan? And that's all it is. It's all really just about that. So his people, it's another checkpoint for some of the people who may be paying a slight attention to the issues, but they don't really pay any attention to his character. It's going to just be about him.
Well, right. And this is goes back to the 2016 campaign style where they had 5,000 data points on every American who used Facebook through Cambridge Analytica. Mm-hmm. Give a shout out to my friend Billy Ray Valentine, who's done excellent research on this. So they're handing him talking points. It's not popular, especially on the right. People that are paying attention, it's not popular to have central bank digital currency. So, I voted for Donald Trump in 2016 because I wanted a border, and instead I got a new world order. I'm not trusting that. I mean, we put President Fauci in charge and did Operation Warp Speed and a lockdown mail-in ballot election. So pardon me if I'm not getting excited about 2024 and the prospects. You know, I can get Nikki Haley, or I've got Donald Trump.
They're just going to inaugurate him, coronate him. You know, that's what the RNC says. Let's just declare him. The primaries are over. Who cares about any of this stuff, right? Yeah. Instead, I love that. Instead of a border, I got a new world order, or we could say I got an executive order.
right.
That locked me down. Precedent. He didn't lock down the border. He locked me down. He said I'm not essential instead of deplorable. What's the big difference with all that stuff? Yeah. So I remember, you know, along those same lines, talking about Billy Ray Valentine talking about how they did with Cambridge Analytica, looking at the analytics. What do people want to hear? And see, that's the beauty. That's what social media was designed for. It was designed so they could not only put out a narrative of propaganda, but they could instantly see if it's working and see what everybody believes, what everybody wants, and you just feed that, okay? And then, and also fine-tune your narrative. But I remember when he was running, I remember going through the healthcare plan, because Obamacare was another one of the big issues at the time. And I remember looking at that, and he had about 12 to 15 different points on there. They were all excellent. They were all about market reform and transparency, so people could see what the hospitals were doing, and make an evaluation in terms of the quality of healthcare as well as the cost of healthcare, empower people with the ability to make these purchases and so forth. And as soon as he got elected, they deep-sixed that down the memory hole, and you never saw it again. I even went back to look for it. I couldn't find it anywhere. And I didn't have the title of it, so I could look for it on the Wayback Machine, and it was completely gone from all the stuff. And instead, what did we get? We got medical martial law. You know, we got the worst health care we've ever had in this country because it was dictated by Donald Trump from Washington, you know, and he dictated it by paying these people to do this stuff. It's amazing how just how opposite it all went. But
yeah, absolutely opposite. And yeah. It's bizarre to me. And I'm not partisan. I'm not political right now because there's nothing for me to support other than local and grassroots movements. Mm-hmm. But it is bizarre to me to see even in alternative media, we're doing this again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to process it, David. I don't know how intellectually, like I can look at somebody and say, well, you're a journalist, you research, you know what happened, but we're going to do this again. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand it. I know that it takes away people's hope. And I guess, you know, financially, it's stupid for me to be opposed to the MAGA movement and all, but I understand what it tracks back to. I know the root and genesis of it is really not about any of the key issues. It's more about directing those people. I mean, if we were going to win, I thought we were supposed to get tired of winning. Remember? I was supposed to get tired of winning. Instead, I got locked down. Yeah. I was told I was not essential. hundreds of thousands of businesses squashed, the supply chain destroyed. We've had cognitive damage to children, unlike anything seen in modern times. I mean, don't get me started with the entire the warp speed injection. I mean, it's all bad, yeah. And so I don't know how I can process that. So I'm not in this political. I'm my wheelhouse is, do you realize what's happening to your currency? Yeah. Do you realize that we're about to shift into a completely new system? And you're going to get left behind if you're paying attention to the old. And so that's really what I feel like my calling is right now. We can talk politics till they're blue in the face. It's such a pageant. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, speaking of pageant, you got Nikki Haley. She was kicked out of the pageant in the 80s, but she's back in this one. You know, she's allowed now. So it is really just ridiculous, Dave.
Yeah, politics is ugly celebrities that are out there.
Yeah, it's a Hollywood for ugly people. Yeah.
So she's our ugly celebrity, and she's gotten pretty ugly with things that she. I think it's interesting that she's got to go to South Carolina to the people that she just threw under the bus, calling them bigoted Deep South people who had elected her twice, and now she's got to go back and try to get votes from them a third time. It's going to be interesting to see. I think maybe that's why. Maybe she would support ending all the primaries at this point. I don't know. But when we look at it, as I was saying before, and as I point out yesterday, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz said, you look at people like Bill Gates and how he's out there scarfing up land everywhere. Warren Buffett with railroads, massive purchases of gold and silver. They would like to get you into things that are encumbered with debt, whether you're talking about the U.S. dollar or whether you're talking about the stock market or even heavily mortgaged property. And so they would like to have you there while they start to accumulate all this stuff, because, you know, if everybody wants to go out and get hard assets and tangible assets and things like that, that's more competition for them. But I think, you know, the more we look at this, the better gold and silver, things like that look to me, because again, it is a hard asset. It's got real intrinsic value, and it's something that has anonymity. Unlike the property, even with all of his shell companies, guess what? They figured out what he's got.
So. Well, besides the foundation of Christianity in the West, we have the idea of private property, mm-hmm. and that's what's driven our civilization. But if you fast forward to the creation of the World Economic Forum, you're supposed to own nothing and be happy. That there's an ownership society they want to create, just a few owners. That's what a 15-minute city is all about.
That's right.
If you think about it, a 15-minute city sounds convenient. You could be within 15 minutes of everything, right? But who owns the things? Because there's going to be blocked out, like, oh, there's. It's just like when you create a new shopping center or a mall. Those owners, those builders go in and they find one store that's going to fit this parameter. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're going to do. It's not diversity. It's not decentralization. It's centralization that they're doing. You talk about the housing, Vanguard, BlackRock, now Facebook, other Silicon Valley overlords are buying up residential property.
That's right. That's right.
We the American people, and especially in the West, we're being pushed out of ownership of real tangible assets. Mm-hmm. And that's because who controls the tangible assets? This is a game. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about it's life and death in a lot of ways, because it's musical chairs with your entire destiny, whether you have anything to say at the end of the day. So anything of value at the end. And that's what these people are doing. They're pushing us out of real ownership. And that's why I keep telling people, pay attention to the currency game. They're getting out of currency, putting it into hard assets. That's why they're searching to park it somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, and BlackRock's in charge of trillions upon trillions of dollars.
And when you look at what is happening in the stock market, they can, you know, pump this stuff up and get everybody, hey, you know, get into this thing. It's maybe volatile and who knows what's going to happen with it, but hey, look, it's going up. So jump onto that. There's the fear of missing out. Everybody pours into that. They take their profits and go buy tangible assets, go buy our homes so that we have no place to, you know, no home ownership. That's the key thing. You say 15 minutes, everything's so convenient. No, there won't be anything. You'll be 15 minutes from nothing. You know, there'll be nothing really that you want or nothing that you can do. And if there's something that happens to be somewhere else, you're not going to be able to go there either. But of course, the thing that gives us variety and gives us choice is competition and mobility and all these different things. So when you shut all that stuff down, these 15-minute open air prisons are not going to have anything in them, as you point out. They're going to, you know, it's going to be some kind of a generic, you know, everything will be just generic because they're going to have some kind of a concession from the government that controls it all.
Yes, the combined wealth of BlackRock and Vanguard and some of these other oligarchs in the WEF outstripped the GDP of the United States. Right? So they, who's really making the rules here? It's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. Pay attention to what they do, not so much what they say, because, you know, you get Larry Fink will come out and say Bitcoin's a store of value with a wink and a nod. And I've been contemplating that for 2 weeks. I mean, what is that? And then I have Stuart Engler on my show and he goes, well, it's because they're manipulating with detail. Oh, I see. I get it now. Yeah. And I'm, because I was trying to find the angle. What's the angle? What's the angle? Because I'm, that's all it has to be an angle, right? It can't be, because they're not about free markets.
Right.
They don't want you to own anything. I doubt they want you to be happy either. I think they want you to shut up. I think they want you to be anesthetized, take some Soma.
Yeah.
That in the New World Order. That's what this is all about. And, you know, buy some FANG stocks because Jim Cramer told you so. You know, that's where we are right now. People need, it is saddening to watch because we're getting ready to do 2016 part two, the reckoning, and people are getting behind that again. I don't know what to say because the country, look at the departure of any sort of normality or sanity, David. I mean, it's,
yeah, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, just on the political spectrum, you know, the fact that you're going to just say, well, we're going to kick everybody off the ballot except for Biden in Florida. Then, you know, other places they kick Biden off because he tried to leapfrog their, you know, New Hampshire tried to leapfrog their thing. But then now the RNC is the craziest thing. Well, let's just forget all the rest of the primaries. Let's just have them in there. They've already, you know, trashed all the debates. They didn't talk about anything of any substance anyway in the debates. It's always just a rehash of the same issues they've been talking about for the last 60 years, and they never say anything. But they're not even going to go through the motions of pretending to have debates and elections and all the rest of this stuff. It truly is amazing, and it is another testimony of the fact that everything is just being you know, swept away, and the financial system is going to be a big part of that as well. It's going to happen the same way. One day they're going to just say, well, let's just forget about all this and we'll just do something completely different.
That's what you have to watch for. And you know there's pushback on CBDC. We got some grassroots. It's entered the consciousness of at least a percentage of voters that makes it appealing for them, for the people to hand Donald Trump a note to say, hey, you're against this.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we've made some inroads.
That's right.
But they will find a way. In crisis is usually the way. It's one of people to watch for, because it will be used. The crisis will be used as an opportunity to get people to ask for it. I mean, that's really generally the rule of how all of this works. You're going to have to ask for it. But it is like my friend Charlie Robinson says, CBDC is the hill to die on. I mean, I'm broadcasting more because of it. I've made myself do more shows and more appearances because it's not just about getting your hands on, you know, physical precious metals or something without counterparty risk outside of the system. You need to understand the dangers of what they're building.
Yes.
And I don't know that political, if we believe this is a selection, does it really matter if people are against it, you know, on a national level? I think what really works is what we're seeing, which is real solutions, like Senator Nicely in Tennessee, you know, the state, the reserve system for having a gold and silver bank for exchange. Same thing in Texas, making gold and silver legal tender in different states. It that has momentum. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's what we should get behind right now.
Exactly.
Because that's going to make it available for us to still have a live our lives and still have somewhat modicum of liberty.
And see, that's one of the things too, when you look at this, you know, this map and all these different states saying we're going to side with Texas. That's the important thing for people to change their focus from Washington to looking at, well, maybe we can fix this at the state level. I see that as the most positive thing coming out of this. And again, you're talking about Senator Nicely, and it's not just Senator Nicely in Tennessee. There's other people in other states throughout the South, typically, where they are looking at this and they're realizing, hey, this whole thing is going to just, you know, it's going to collapse. It's a house of cards. And we got to do something at the state level to try to have some kind of stability. And so you got people at the state level, just like, you know, whatever happens with this border thing, at least it's changing people's focus and what they look at. It's like, yeah, let's let the states take care of this because the federal government's not going to do it. They didn't do it even under Trump. And so those things are positive. And when we talk about the CBDC thing, I remember maybe it was a year, maybe it was 2 years ago when we were talking about CBDC and it was still pretty much unknown. And And it was, but you would ask people, do you support CBO? I don't know what that is. But then if you went down and you told them step by step all the different aspects of it, oh, they were adamantly opposed to that. But now it's gotten around enough that Trump can just throw out the term CBDC, and that's a bone to his people. So that's a good thing. They know that people now understand what CBDC is. And if you understand that term, you certainly do understand all of those different aspects of it that are going to be kicked into place. So that's a good thing as well. As the states coming together on financial issues, that's already been happening under the radar. And now this is in front of everybody, and everybody's saying, maybe we should have some decentralization. So I think that's ultimately a good thing, perhaps.
Well, I remember speaking to Republican. I had a couple of different talks I did from Republican groups in North Texas, and I think I did one in August of 22. No one had heard of CBDC. They had no idea what I was talking about. I came back about 6 months later. I started seeing some heads nod, and since that time, I'm seeing them post about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're out front. That's a testament to shows like yours and alternative media and people that are concerned with issues that truly matter. You know, like, not the pageantry, you know, all of this, the WWE, the wrestling that we're seeing in so much of our politics, getting, the personal slights and the partisanship. That's a sideshow because it's CBDC, it's consolidation. You know, what we're watching is the continuation of the plans that they've put in place that we've been talking about for years. That I've been on your show talking about for years. You know, we got the IMF drawing up the plans, and they have introduced the Unicoin, the Bank of International Settlements, talking about, you know, uniting all of these central bank digital currencies into one clearinghouse. They're already planning it. So it doesn't matter, such parties against it in the U.S. What matters is state level. Yes. Because on the federal level, it's a top heavy bureaucracy that again, the people have no say in. I don't believe that. I don't believe that we have a say in the federal level anymore. I think state level, absolutely, though. Mm-hmm. And that's the path, is decentralization.
Just going back to the border thing, right? You got, what are they going to do about it? As Chip Roy said, you know, we say we're going to impeach Mayorkas for this open border thing, and yet we continue to give him money. When you look at the financial side of it, they can complain about anything that happens financially, but hey, the Federal Reserve doesn't even need their money. Yeah, it's got its own, it's controlling all of the money. So Congress doesn't even have any financial control over the Federal Reserve. And that's why it's important to do this at the state level. And as you point out, you know, it was only a year ago that nobody really knew what was going on with this stuff. It was in the spring, I think, that Senator Nicely had me go speak to the finance committee at the state and, you know, to talk to them about CBDC because they didn't really know about it. But now everybody knows about it. So that's good. And now that people see governors coming together to solve a problem, they might start thinking, well, could they come together to solve any other problems? And what other problems might we have? Maybe the financial stuff, which is the biggest problem. And the CBDC is the express ticket to a mark of the beast global system. It's got the ID and the financial controls. It is the mother load. As you said, it's the hill to die on.
Yes. Well, and then 2020 had a cascading effect on people's outlook on politics, especially in places like Texas. And I've seen that where I can go in and I'm talking in front of a Republican group. This is not a year or so ago. And I'm, you know, detailing some history of communism and the linkage to the Illuminati. And they're all just nodding their head like, yeah, that's really, I mean, that's how far politics have changed from the time that I ran for Congress. I was a little, I mean, obviously it's me. So I was way outside of what was accepted in the establishment. But especially I really turned that on too in the last 10 years so that people were just keeping up with me. Absolutely. There's a new world order. Absolutely. We got to look out. They're trying to take all national sovereignty. Yes. There's a conspiracy. Yeah, absolutely. So I think people are pushing, and you see Greg Abbott, who is an abject failure and an establishment hack, a Karl Rove guy, neocon of the highest order. I remember talking to Tom Paakin, who was running for governor at the same time. He didn't actually get into the primary, but Tom Paakin was head of the Young Republicans back in the 1960s. Pat Buchanan writes about Tom in a couple of his books. And I think Tom had ran for senator, really smart guy. And I asked him, I said, what's going on with Greg Abbott? And he goes, oh, complete sellout, Karl Rove guy. neocon, just bought and paid for. He told me how much money he had going into, this is 2014, going into the primaries. He goes, I think he's got like 68 million or so. It's some crazy number just to even start out with. So, you know, and in 2015, I saw a tweet from Greg Abbott that said, mocking the Dallas Cowboys. He said, that defensive line is more open than the U.S. border. And I thought, you're governor, the southern border. You're the governor, and you're laughing about this.
Yeah.
And he's busing people up to Martha's Vineyard for political stunts. You know, you've mentioned many times about him giving, you know, hundreds of millions to this shell corporation out of Frisco, Texas, to do contact tracing. And the
first thing he did with his Trump funds, you know, was
the Trump funds, right?
You know, because that was the thing. All these governors, Brad Little, a Republican. Now, of course, you know, Brad Little is part of this coalition to let's back up Texas and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, Brad Little, he dissolved the legislature. Say, go away. I don't want you getting in the way of my executive orders, because he had money that was given to him, discretionary funds for him to control completely, that were several times the entire budget of the state. And so, you know, that's where that stuff rolled out. But yeah, you're right about Greg Abbott. He's engaged in a lot of political stuff. And of course, this is ultimately a political thing as well. As I was pointing out earlier, if what are Biden's options? Well, he can try to strong arm this, and he can try to nationalize the National Guard. And then what's that going to look like? Everybody agrees that this is an invasion, and they're going to see him as a traitor if he does this. So it is a shrewd political move by Abbott and by the Republicans. I think the good thing that comes out of it, though, is regardless of whether they solve any problems, it takes people's focus away from solely looking at the federal government and solely looking at the presidential race.
I absolutely agree. But I will say, you know, you're right about that. I mean, here we are in January. It's an election year. And lo and behold, here's the border is back, even though the border has been in crisis for years and years and years. I mean, ever since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Every Republican in Texas, we're going to secure the border, you know, over and over again. We hear this every election. And now it's just, I mean, they're not even trying. I mean, they're not even trying to cover up the fact that they want this. They want, I call it weapons of mass immigration.
Yeah.
This is a way to destroy it, not only to remake the demographics of the United States, but I think it's a psychological operation as well, David, to make you feel like you have no power.
That's right.
That the United States is a pitiful giant, that it can't control its borders. That, I mean, it's clear. The border exposes everything, whether it's COVID-1984 or whether it's the war on terror, you know, with George W. Bush, and we got to fight him over there, so not to fight him over here. Stupidity. And that's where we are. The border exposes the lie of all those things. And it shows right now that this, they could solve the border issue. And when I ran for Congress, I said, why do we have, troops on the border of South Korea, not South Texas? Mm-hmm. But when you put them there, when you put the troops there, they're just Sherpas. They just take I see you're traveling. Let me take you to this holding facility. You know, you stamp your hand and you get into they put you on a bus and there you go. And that's, you're a Sherpa. You're not security.
Yeah.
And so that fundamentally something has to change on the state level, whether it's, you know, calling up the National Guard and again, overriding federal, you know, mandates or whatever these orders are that are keeping these troops from being able to detain. Mm-hmm. There's a humanitarian solution to this. And maybe you have to create sort of like a DMZ area where there's holding facilities and people that are truly, you know, political refugees. I mean, we want to do right by that. We are still the United States of America, but there has to be order to it. You can't
there
just
has to be a deterrence.
And there has to be order.
Yeah, as some of these pictures, a lot of pictures, you know, of troops on their way to the border, you know, getting on planes. I've showed some of those. But then there was another one, and, you know, they were marching down a road, and they just had journalists with their cameras all over the place, you know, filming the troops, but also the journalists were filming each other, filming the troops, and inadvertently. And as one person pointed out, you notice they don't have any guns. They're not armed for any of this stuff. They did have face shields on, but they didn't have any guns. So you don't really, again, how much of this is a pageant and how much of it is something's really going to happen. And I don't want to really live in a, I don't want to live in an East Berlin type of environment either. You know, my big concern is that this is a welfare magnet that's pulling people across. If they're not coming for money and free stuff, if they are coming in with whatever they come in with, and they're going to work hard. I'm all in favor of that. That's the old fashioned Ellis Island model of immigration. Yes. I'm really in favor of that. I think that is a good thing. And I think that kind of, you know, the diversity and things like that that came out of it really were a strength. But this is not what this is. This is Cloward and Piven. This is a welfare magnet. And this is chaos. As you pointed out, it is demoralizing. And that's really the purpose of what Soros is doing with the district attorneys and everything else like that. Just to watch people come in and loot a store and get away with it. Well, we're watching people come in and loot the country and get away with it. And so it is a psychological war of demoralization that is at the bottom of this, I think.
Well, I think you're right. And I got the East Berlin vibes too. I guess probably a few years ago. And I finally just said, I don't want a wall because I think that at this point they're just building it to keep me in.
Yeah.
I think we can have border security. I think it can be, again, you can save the landscape, the land there. You don't have to take eminent domain. You just have to, you can use technology, but you has to have order.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I think it's good to have people come in and build businesses and work and start families. And our advantage here in this hemisphere is to the south of us are generally Catholic people. You know, you've got it still has a Western tradition built into that. So that is a positive. It's just too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of immigration that we have, David, as you know, is far surpassing anything in our history. We talk about the great waves of migration that happened, you know, that when America was referred to as the melting pot, but it was mostly European centered, and it was almost never more than a couple hundred thousand.
Yeah,
exactly. And a year. And then there was periods of years and years of moratoriums, of pauses.
That's
to
right.
give time. But we've just opened the floodgates. And especially since the fall of the Soviet Union, this has been an operation. You have a million new legal immigrants a year, legal. That's a million. 80% of all new immigrants vote Democrat. That's 800,000 new Democrats a year. And I think the Republicans like that too, for whatever reason. they want more. Lindsey Graham wanted to double it, immigration, not too long ago, at least. You know, he was afraid that we can't get people on the Social Security rolls. This is how they think.
Yeah.
But, you know, the illegal part is unknown. You're probably 30, 40, 50 million. Who knows at this point? And even the dummy George W. Bush said, one in 12 is a criminal that crossed the border. I'm like, well, that's an invasion.
Yeah.
That's right. And why don't you do something about it? I mean, I wear this green wristband for Dominic Durden. I met his mother, Sabina Durden, at the Federation for Americans for Immigration Reform in 2019. I had an interview with her. She's angel mom. She lost her son to an illegal immigrant. And I had it was such a powerful interview. I told her I'll never take it off. Wow. So I have it. I've worn it since 2019. Every day I wear this this wristband to remind me that our politicians that promise to protect us, like Greg Abbott, are absolute failures. Mm-hmm. They're derelict in their duty, and they get people killed.
Yes.
Because people that aren't supposed to be here, because there is no rule of law. And I don't want a lockdown country. I don't want, you know, some kind of police state. But we can do that. We can actually have a secure border. You just have to have the will to do it. I think the will is there from the people. But what this is exposing is the larger picture of how fake our politics are. Folks, we had fake money, fake politicians, fake news with real consequences.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, real consequences. That's right. Yeah, you're right. It's not just a qualitative difference. It is a quantitative difference that we've never seen before in this country. And that's happening globally. It's coming through the UN. And, you know, people need to wake up. People need to do something about it. And, you know, again, Abbott is a showman, just like all these other people. You know, they'll have their show trials in Congress, and I don't think they're going to do anything about it. But there is something that we can do in our personal life, isn't it? You know, we can make some preparations for things and tell people a little bit about what's going on at Wise Wolf Gold.
I saw an article on CBS Financial before we went on the air, and it was asking, which one is better, 1 ounce gold bars or 1 gram gold bars? Which should you buy? And I thought, well, it depends how much money you have. You know, that's a good, there's 31 grams in a troy ounce of gold.
Depends on if you're European or American, I guess, whether you get an ounce or a gram, right?
Correct.
Metric or English.
There's a demand for both. And I think a lot of the people that There's something about the gold industry and especially the 1-800 numbers. I got a 1-800 number, but I'm not a national brand per se. I'm not ubiquitous with a bullpen full of traders. I think what you're watching is people are starting to buy physical gold. These articles are popping up and people just think they can't afford it. It's one of the reasons I started Wolfpack. You can go to davidknight.gold. There's a tab that says join Wolfpack. I did the inverse of what every other gold dealer and national brand has done. I went after people and I'm across the board. We do high, big transactions too, but I wanted to talk to the people that were the $50 a month, mm-hmm. the $125 a month, like people that need to save, they want to stack, but they're like, I call, you know, this, not the guy's disappointed. I don't have 10,000. We're not, you can come see us mm-hmm. and we'll get you access to things like gold backs, you know, the 24 karat gold notes. We can put those in even the lowest package, the lowest tier. But the article's talking about Graham, you pay a high premium whenever you fractionalize physical gold. So one of the things I did with Wolfpack was, because of the amount of people that join, I buy sheets, like they're 100 gram sheets of 1 gram gold bars. They're all connected. I have my crew put on little white gloves and they take each piece and break it apart and we individually package it. So we save you that premium, do a comparison invoice. So you're, instead of paying $100, $200, $203 plus shipping for a gram bar of gold, we get it down to 84, yep. You know, somewhere in there. So you get to save that premium. So there's ways for you to buy fractional gold without paying too much premium. And again, there's ways for you to buy gold. You don't have to buy a bar. You know, mm-hmm. in a bar of gold right now is over $2,100. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that. You can just buy pieces of it at a time. And that's been my mission at Wolfpack. Yes, we do we do IRA rollovers and 401k rollovers. We do big transactions. But I really enjoyed growing the even the Wolf Cub aspect. It's $35 a month for kids. I was able to put in some free wheat pennies. I bought some wheat pennies the other day. I had a big stack of them.
I remember those. Yeah,
wheat pennies are fun, and they're copper. You know, any penny before 1982 is copper. Mm-hmm. You know, because the copper it became more expensive than the penny, and that's why we just have base metals. I mean, this is, you know, history is full of these stories, David, of the empires when it starts to decline. See, great empires, as you know, they rise on sound money. They rise on manufacturing and production, and they decline on fiat currency and free trade. Now, we don't mean free trade like not free markets, but these agreements where, you know, what we've done is we put American workers in some sort of Darwinian contest, survival of the fittest with countries with no regulation and slave labor. You know, and that's what we've done. And we incentivize corporations to do that. That's what I'm referring to with free trade. So we're in the decline phase, unfortunately. And again, we go back to earlier in our conversation. What does that mean for you? Well, the wealthiest people, you know, they continue to become wealthy and wealthy because they're buying up all the assets. Mm-hmm. And those of us who are chasing the green pieces of paper, trying to keep the lights on, it's harder to do that. So one of the ways that you can do that, just get out of, or at least to the best of your ability. There is a war on cash. I'm not telling you to have no cash, but you should deal in silver, deal in gold, have some physical gold and silver. Go to davidknight.gold. It's easy to do. My crew is, we're learning more and more every day how to make the systems better and get orders out faster. So please go to davidknight.gold, and it supports David too.
And it's a great thing. You know, we're talking about the Wolfpack, getting that quantity discount without having to buy a massive quantity because you're doing it as a group. And that's been one of the main selling points. We were talking earlier about the ETFs, main selling point of the ETF with the paper gold and paper silver. Well, you can get a fraction of an ounce. You don't have to buy so much of it at a time. But the increment that you're offering is much less. You still get a quantity discount. And what I found out, I saw the ETF paper gold and paper silver. I realized when gold started moving around, it's like, wait a minute, these things aren't tracking. What's the matter with that? And then I started doing my investment. It's like, maybe they don't have any gold that's really there. Maybe they're using this to manipulate the market, that type of thing. So, you know, but again, that was one of the major reasons for them to have an ETF. It's probably one of the major selling points for them doing a Bitcoin ETF is to fractionalize it. But people can get in small amounts, as you pointed out, and still have something that is physical, that's private. And that's going to be the key thing, I think, as we move forward, that, you know, financial privacy that is they're working so hard to get rid of. We've got to preserve that. Thank you so much, Tony, for coming on. It's always great talking to you. And we have you on a Friday now instead of on a Thursday, so
we'll try for Thursdays. I didn't want to miss another week.
Fine. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. I know you're very busy. Thank you for taking the time to come on and talk with us, and thank you for David. Your support. I appreciate it.
The David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. I mean, trust the science. Wear your mask, take your vaccine, don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds, it's the David Knight Show.